Welcome to the Dr. D. Martini Show, where international author, speaker, teacher, and philosopher, Dr. John D. Martini shares with you exactly how to break through whatever is holding you back from your best life. Welcome to the Dr. D. Martini Show. Inside of this episode, Dr. D. Martini is going to be sharing with you exactly how you can increase your deserve level and get what you want. So one of the keys to a successful life is having the ability to increase your deserve level. And inside of all of us, we have a set point of our deserve level. And inside of this episode, Dr. DeMartini is going to be sharing with you some quality questions on how you can raise that deserve level. And what this means for you is if you have shame or guilt around something that you have done in the past, we're going to transform that so you're able to find the hidden meaning and actually discover how that is serving you. You're also going to discover what may be lowering your self-worth and holding you back from feeling worthy. And then Dr. DeMartini is going to give you some strategies on how you can turn that around. Head over to drdemartini.com to see the notes and resources for this particular episode and explore more of Dr. DeMartini's work. Enjoy.
Can you spend a few minutes, John, just explaining to us what do you mean by a person's deserve level?
Well, I'll use this as an example. If you've ever been in a transaction, a business transaction, where you've done a service and they've paid more than what you feel you've delivered, you feel that you want to offer more service to compensate and to make sure you have a fair exchange. We have a built-in thermostat. Our intuition guides us to an internal thermostat to make sure we have fair exchange. It's called equity. In equity theory, they describe this. And anytime we do a transaction, we feel like we've delivered more and people paid us less than what we feel we deserve, we kind of get narcissistic. So we tend to get narcissistic if we feel we've been shortchanged. We tend to get altruistic if we tend to feel like we shortchanged them. Everything is attempting to get an equanimity within ourselves and an equity between ourselves and others. Now, whenever we feel that we have not delivered our part, and we have maybe some shame or guilt for not delivering it, we feel that we need to compensate by trying to give. And the other side, we tend to compensate by trying to take. And our deserve level is based on the accumulation of our prides and shames. And so if we have been accumulating things that we've done that we feel that are incomplete, we feel like we owe people things, our deserve level goes down. And we feel like we owe things to people, and we feel like we're having difficulty receiving it. So anything we can do to raise our deserve level allows us to have and be and do more in our life. And to not only that could be financial, it could be relationships, it could be in business, it could be opportunities, it could be health. So our deserve level is very important. And in making sure that we feel we have fair exchange, this is very crucial for our overall well-being. So our deserve level is the willingness to receive the things that we have in our innermost dominant thought, the things that we set goals for and the things that we want in life. And so that's why tonight's important, I think.
Yeah, you touched on fair exchange. And I think, you know, a lot of people say, why did this flat tire happen to me? I didn't deserve it. Or, you know, so I often wonder about the balance of karma in the world and how it works. So does someone's deserve level impact their ability to create abundance and success?
Yes, and let me elaborate on something, and I rarely do a talk, live or webinar, without mentioning human values, as you probably have, you know. Every human being has a set of priorities, a set of values, things that are most important to least important in their life, that they live their life by. Now, that evolves and changes over time, but at any moment, we have a set, and it's unique to us. It's like a fingerprint. And anytime we set goals that are aligned and congruent and are completely dovetailed with our highest value, because we are spontaneously inspired from within intrinsically to do that highest value, when we set a goal that aligns with it, we tend to achieve it. We have an increasing probability of achievement of that. And we have an increasing probability of our self-worth going up and our deserve level going up because we feel like we're living and walking our talk, not limping our life. But anytime we set a goal that is lower on our values and that are not really priority, we'll tend to procrastinate, hesitate, and frustrate. We'll tend to need outside motivation or incentives to get us to do it. And we tend to not get it done. We tend to limp our life. So as a result of it, we tend to what we say, not do, and our self-worth goes down. Our image and confidence goes down. And so it's so crucial if we want to raise our deserve level and our self-worth, if you will, and our feeling like we're contributing and we deserve, is to make sure that we're living as congruent as possible with what we value most. This is now our identity and our own conscious awareness of who we are revolve around our highest values. So when we live congruently with that, we're most authentic and most integral and less fragmented. And so this is what elevates our natural born leader, our innate emergence of our power and our self-worth and our deserve level. And what happens is we're able to bring in what we want. Our innermost dominant thought becomes our outermost tangible reality. If we're setting goals that align with our innermost dominant thought, our highest value, we have the highest probability of deserve and receiving and achieving things. So it's very crucial to know what you value most and to set goals that are aligned with that to maximize your deserve level and to make sure you maintain fair exchange, sustainable fair exchange with people. This is one of the keys to maximizing the opportunities in your life and the reception of opportunities and rewards in life.
Fantastic. So you really do get what you deserve based on your values. And as we both know, your values, you can't crook or run away from. They are your values. So that's very interesting. I've heard you say in the past that when you're self-righteous, you attract sort of humbling circumstances into your life. Can you explain to us what the difference is between having a high deserve level and being self-righteous? As a lot of the audience, I'm sure this evening, would may have a few concerns. If they raise their deserve level, then now all of a sudden they're going to have all these problems, like I mentioned earlier, about the puncture in the car and this and that. So how do you balance those unwanted humbling circumstances?
Well, I think most people have had an experience in their life where they were pretty cocky, self-righteous, puffed up, inflated, superiority complex, and attracted events or people or situations that kind of brought them back into equilibrium and brought them down. So it's a hubris, pride before the fall, as they say, as a proverb. So we're not here to elevate ourselves in the sense of pride. We're here to expand ourselves in the sense of meaning and purpose in life. Now, again, let's go back to the values. When we set a goal that is aligned and congruent with our highest value, we are more objective and less subjective. We see things with more balanced view instead of a biased view. And we tend to be more resilient and adaptable to whatever happens to us. And we're able to embrace both sides of ourself, the parts that we like or maybe dislike. And therefore, we're more centered. But when we're subordinating to people on the outside and attempting to be something we're not, maybe we look up to somebody and we think, oh, I wish I could be like them. I think they have something I don't. I'm too humble to admit what I see in them is inside me, and I play small and I exaggerate them and minimize me. The moment you do, you attempt to live outside your own highest value. And this is where you tend to become volatile and less integral. And you tend to be somebody you're not, trying to be somebody you're not. And you can't. You won't achieve that way. I think Emerson said, envy is ignorance and imitation is suicide. I'd rather be number one at being Dr. Demartini than number two at being Elvis Presley or something. So the second you are expecting to be a cat when you're a fish, or expecting to be a fish when you're a cat, you self-depreciate. And because you set goals that aren't yours. And whenever you set goals that aren't really truly most important to you and meaningful to you, you have a lower probability of achieving it, and your self-worth reflects it. So when you are trying to live by other people's values, and you temporarily do things that seem to match that, you go into a false pride. When you set goals that are aligned with somebody else and you tend to not be able to live by it, you have a shame. And these are the things that cause the polarities that attract equilibrating forces in nature to try to get us back into our authentic self. So our job is to live congruently with our highest value, where we have the most objectivity. We're able to embrace both sides of ourselves. We don't need to exaggerate ourselves. And when people challenge us if we're living by our highest values, we have the greatest resilience. We're able to see it on the way, not in the way. But when we're not living by our highest values, when somebody challenges us, we tend to get self-righteous and defend ourselves. And that cocky, self-righteous behavior when we defend ourselves is what brings in the humiliating factors to get us back into equilibrium, to get us back to ourselves. I'm a real firm believer that our brain is a highest value seeking organ. It's trying to get us objective with reason instead of subjective with emotion. And it's trying to help us feel inspired instead of feeling the polarities, the bipolar states. And the second we live congruently that way with our highest values, our executive center comes online. We become more balanced in our orientation, as I said, and more of a self-governed individual. And therefore, when people throw challenges or support to us, we don't take them as strongly. We respond to them with more equanimity, and we don't get emotional about it. So we don't get elated when we get flattered, and we don't get depressed, and we get challenged. We see both of them as on the way. And this is what allows us to not get too cocky, which when we need this humbling process. So cockiness and self-righteousness and pride is not you. The real you is very poised, very present, very powerful, very, very patient, very prioritized, very productive. And the false you is an exaggeration that occurs when you feel challenged and you defend yourself. And that's why you need humbling to get you back to yourself. I think that everything in your physiology and around you in sociology is trying to get you to be your authentic self. If you interpret life that way, you'll see things on the way, not in the way.
Thank you, John. And, you know, we mentioned puffed up, exaggerated, cocky, self-righteous a lot, which leads into our next question, which is someone like Donald Trump, who's clearly got a very, very high deserve level. He's also perceived, obviously, a lot now as being very arrogant, self-righteous, and, you know, quite honestly, a little bit self-serving at the moment. Some people may question, do you have to sell out to have that high deserve level, or is he just an exception to the rule?
You know, I've had the opportunity to meet Donald, and I've interacted with him on a number of occasions. And yes, on the public display, he is displaying those traits. And as you would imagine, there is a tremendous amount of opposition as a result of it. The media go after him, people attack him. There's you know, groups of people gather together to go attack him. So that is the result of his outward appearance and his outward display. I've also seen him very humble and very quiet and very attentive and listen. Very commonly with his own family, he can be that way. And if somebody's saying something that is meaningful, he's very attentive and very listening. So I've seen him, and I'm sure in some of the negotiations he's playing, he also plays that side too. So I don't know if that's always the case. I know we certainly see it on media. That's an image he likes to portray. But every human being, you know, in the Breakthrough Experience program that I teach, every time I ask people in the program, go to a moment when you felt cocky, proud, self-righteous, inflated, and you had a mask and persona of superiority. And I have them identify where it was, when it was, and to who it was. And once I get really present with them, I ask them, in that moment, where are you minimizing yourself and where you feel maybe shamed or humiliated? And to their surprise, it's there. The mind maintains equanimity, but we are not aware of it. We have a conscious part of us and we have an unconscious part. But the conscious part, when we're arrogant, attracts the things that humble it. But deep inside, we have another part. And I am absolutely certain that even Donald has this, a very humbled, a very humiliated part, a shame part, trying to balance it out to try to get us into equilibrium and become fully conscious. Our intuition is trying to help us see that. And if we don't see it, we'll play out this persona and then we'll attract attack to get us back into equilibrium. It's wiser to have your own intuition and your own brain guide you back into self-governance than having to have the world around you humble you. And I am certain that Donald has these two sides. As I've worked with thousands of people, this is always the case. So if he doesn't listen to his own feedback, the world around him has to attack him to bring him back down. If he's slow in getting that lesson, well, slowly but surely, the responsibilities that he's facing will erode that cockiness, if you will. So slowly but surely, he'll have that maturity and that wisdom of equilibrium, or otherwise he'll be fighting uphill the whole time. But we all have it. And we all have an internal thermostat to get us back in equilibrium. If I go up to you and I said to you, you're always kind, you're never cruel, you're always nice, you're never mean, you're always positive, you're never negative, you're always sweet, you're never bitter, you're always generous, you're never stingy, you wouldn't believe me. You would go, well, that's not quite true. I'm not always one-sided. And if I said you're always mean, you're never kind, you're always cruel, you're never kind, you're always taking, you're never giving, you're always warful, never peaceful, you're always inconsiderate, never considerate, you also wouldn't believe it. But you would believe it if I said sometimes you're nice, sometimes you're mean, sometimes you're kind, sometimes you're cruel, sometimes you're positive, sometimes you're negative. You'd believe the balance. And so it's wise for us not to be swayed by perceptions of people one-sided, because the truth is they have both sides. And even Donald has those two sides. So it's wise to keep that in mind, because it's the centering. When we can govern ourselves and stay centered, we have the most self-worth, the most power, the most influence. And when we go the other side, we attract distractions that humble us. And so Donald will learn that lesson over time. It's inevitable. But it's wise for us to not have the wisdom of the ages with the aging process. Wise to have the wisdom of the ages without it, and learn to govern ourselves and become centered and authentic in the process.
Yeah, and I think the media is doing a fantastic job of humbling him recently. So we'll leave that to them, and we can focus on our side. Why do some people have such a high deserve level and others such a low deserve level? And at what point does it occur? What role does nature versus nurture have to play in that scenario?
Well, I think that sometimes what we have called nature and nurture, sometimes it's called genetic and environment also. We really have, from the single-celled organism, when the zygote is formed from the sperm and the egg, every time that cell divides, undergoes mitotic division, it is experiencing an environment and responding to that environment and accumulating epigenetic alterations as it goes along and differentiates. And eventually, as we're born, we are a culmination of a lot of experiences we've already had in the womb. And so what we think is something that has been possibly our gene code is still also partly genetic and epigenetics, things that we've experienced in our environment just inside the womb. So that boundary is a vague boundary sometimes. It's hard to really pin which is which. But we know that when we are living congruent by whatever we value most, we maximize our self-worth. That is absolutely clear. You know, if you do an interview or watch a few interviews on Warren Buffett, you really get to see it. You know, he'll you ask him or talk to him and interview with him, you'll see that he's very much in love with what he does. He loves it. I mean, when you're 11 years old, he already read all the books in the Omaha, Nebraska library on finance and economics and personal wealth building. He's already doing stock trades at 11. So he loves what he does. And that means he's congruent with his highest value. The same with Tom Jones, when I met the singer Tom Jones. And many of the people I knew that are really super excellers have that congruence. There's an authentic. I have a feeling that we could probably find that in people like Elon Musk with his vision, and many others that have done extraordinary things in the world. I've met a Cheng Diaz, who's an astronaut that's gone on to space 7 times. Guy was focused. He was inspired. He was a very amazing guy. And I'd have to say that when I see people that are really congruent, they achieve incredible things. Their self-worth draws in opportunity, people, places, things, ideas, and events in their life that helps them create their innermost dominant thought. There's a lovely lady named Dina Friedman, who is in Israel and teaches mainly Jewish women and empowers them and helps them do extraordinary things. She was one of the most congruent women I have actually had the opportunity to do the DeMartini value determination process on. Very empowered woman, very congruent woman, and impacts lots of other people as a result of it, thousands of people. And I think that that's self-evident. When you see somebody that's truly inspired by something and is very clear and concise and highly prioritized and lives according to what they really value most and doesn't get swayed by subordination to other people and doesn't waste their time trying to get other people to do something that's not meaningful to them, they really wake up their natural born leader. These individuals leave their mark, their exemplification of what's possible for human beings. So I'm a firm believer in that identifying what's really valuable to. That's why the breakthrough experience, that's one of the key elements of that weekend, is to make sure that people access what they value most and start structuring their life around it, because their deserve level goes up and their opportunities go skyrocketing. They see opportunities, they're able to take advantage of opportunities, things happen. And this is very crucial to have congruency. We've heard about it. It's called integrity, it's called congruency, it's called mastery, it's called many different things. It's called self-governance. But these are all signs of living according to what we value most, authentic.
And, you know, from taking from my point of view and having had the privilege of working with you all this time behind the scenes and seeing how you are on stage and behind the stage, I can just attest to the congruency that you bring to your work, John, and the level of authenticity. And I think people that have followed you and done your courses, the success that you've grown from that is because of that authenticity. So would you say there's a key thing that blocks a person from having a high deserve level? Because now I think everyone wants a high deserve level. What would be the blocks in that person achieving that high deserve level?
Well, anytime you set a goal, an intention to do something that's not truly meaningful to you, you're automatically on your way down. You know, there are three fantasies that erode self-worth and image. And that is setting goals that are impossible, setting goals that are improbable, and setting goals that have not been executively strategized. So you don't really have a plan. And so you're kind of going out there and doing a trial and error telenomics instead of a telelogical, foresighted plan. So an impossible thing is I'm going to be peaceful, never warful. I'm going to be positive. I'm never going to be negative. I'm going to be kind. I'm never going to be cruel, like I was saying earlier. Or I'm going to, you know, do one-sided outcomes. I'm going to make everybody happy. They're never going to be sad. Or I'm going to always be positive. I'm never going to be negative. Anytime you set up an objective that's one-sided in a magnetic world, you're going to beat yourself up. You're going to have internal anger and aggression. You're going to have internal feelings of you betrayed yourself and blame yourself, and you'll be bitter to yourself. You'll criticize, you'll challenge yourself. You'll feel despaired and depressed. You'll feel like you want to exit and escape your own nature. You'll feel frustrated and futile. You'll feel grouchy and grief, and you'll feel some hatred and you'll feel hurt. I call it the ABCDFGHs of negativity. These are natural biological responses to setting goals that are impossible. And then you say the same for the setting improbables. Anytime you set a goal that's not aligned with your highest value or nearly the top three values, I find that in the breakthrough experience, I emphasize how important it is to set goals that are really congruent. And by the way, when you set a goal that is congruent, you feel it's impossible for you not to do. You feel it's already present. It's not in the future. It's already done. You feel it's destined. You have clarity of vision. You can see strategically how you can do it. And you have a yearning and an emergent energy automatically to go act on it. And there's no hesitation. You have fluency and congruency towards the objective. And so setting a goal that's congruent, and make sure it's probable. That's the highest probability you have. And the third one is to make sure that you actually do activate your executive center and strategically plan things in foresight. People that have foresight go farther than people that have to live by hindsight. That's what makes humans different than animals. Humans have the ability to access meaning and foresight and be teleological and purposefully driven. And animals are more hedonistic in that respect and telenomical, where they basically go through by impulse and instinct and trial and error. They have to learn through experience that way. So we have that capacity, and we want to use that capacity if we want to maximize our achievements. So identifying what you value, that's why in the breakthrough experience, I make that one of the crucial components, and to make sure you do everything aligned with that. If you don't set goals that align with your highest values, then it's wise to either shift your values to match the goals or shift the goals to match the values if you want fulfillment. Otherwise, you're going to beat yourself up. You're going to have the ABCDFGHs of negativity. You're going to self-depreciate. And the self-depreciation, I want to make this really clear. The self-depreciation is not your enemy. The self-depreciation is a feedback to you to let you know you're not being authentic. That's it. It's a gift, actually. And for many years, when I was in the positive thinking movement, I stopped 30 years ago. I was 32 years ago now. I was in the idea that I'm supposed to be a one-sided person. And I realized that was delusional when I did that research back in the, 32 years ago. But once I realized that that's not real and I started setting real objective goals that had a balance, my achievement levels went up. I didn't have as much volatility with emotions. My self-worth went up. My deserve level went up. My willingness to receive economics, my willingness to receive opportunities definitely went up. I achieved more. So I'm a very firm believer in making sure that you set real goals that are objective, that are real, that are now. That doesn't mean you have to shrink goals. You can have massive goals. It just has to be probable, possible, and something to strategize and broken down into small enough action steps that you don't procrastinate, hesitate, and frustrate and have the ABCDs of negativity. So I'm a firm believer that the so-called challenging self-depreciation is actually a gift because it's trying to get you back to authenticity. And the moment you do, it goes away. Your negative self-talk is a byproduct of not being congruent. And the second you get congruent, it disappears. And that's why I'm a firm believer in making sure that you identify. That's why I wrote the book, The Values Factor. That's why on my website, I have a complimentary value determination process, because I don't know of anything higher that I could basically get out to people. Accessing that is one of the most crucial things if you want to increase your deserve level.
You spoke about the A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H's of negativity. And I think, you know, coming from a sort of personal development, rah-rah, background myself, I think that was one of the pivotal moments in your teaching, is understanding the balance between the negative and the positive, and how in the darkness, you know, they always say you can't rush your healing, because in the darkness is some of your greatest teachings. So I firmly hold on to that. But Dr. DeMartini, what is the difference between guilt and self-depreciation, and how does that relate to someone being held back from feeling self-deserving with opportunities, in particular with holding on to money and not releasing it?
Yeah, I'd love to tell a story. I don't know if I've got the time here, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yep.
We may have to go over on this one, but I had a lovely lady who in Melbourne, Australia, about 13 years ago, was attending the Breakthrough Experience. And on Sunday, we were identifying our mission. We were composing our mission statement and what we really wanted to dedicate our life to. And I had to make sure that people were not writing down fantasies, because so often people do. They write down these whims that aren't really meaningful. And I want to make sure it was really clear, because if you don't set something that's really meaningful, that your life really demonstrates is true, and start with what you know and let what you know grow in this definition, you set up yourself up for self-depreciation. Well, she put her hand up after she wrote her mission statement and asked for my feedback. Well, instead of me reading it, I just asked her to read it out loud so we could all hear it. And she said, I would like to dedicate my life to helping animals that have been infirmed and that have been injured. And I said, okay, is this something you want to do as an altruistic act? Is this something you want to do as a business? Is this something you just want to do because it makes you feel good? She said, well, it makes me feel good. It's not a business. I like helping animals. I want to take care of animals. And I said, well, if you're doing some sort of altruistic act, it's a compensation for some sort of shame and guilt in the past that you've stored in your subconscious mind. So what is the, when you see an animal, when you think of animals, what do you think of helping? She said, well, it could be any kind of animal, but if you ask me that, I envision horses and things of that nature, and sometimes farm animals and things. And I said, okay, where in your life, somewhere in your past, did you feel shame and guilt associated with not being able to help an animal, just out of curiosity? And she stopped, she reflected, she got a tear in her eye. And she said, when I was 4 years old, and she started crying. When I was 4 years old, I was riding my horse and we were going down in these valleys, and I came up the valley quick and we were running and galloping or whatever. And my horse buckled its leg. And in those days, we had no choice but to put it to sleep. And she literally was crying there as I asked her. I said, you are still storing a shame, a guilt from back then when you were 4 years old. And she said, and when I said that, I didn't realize it, but the guy next to her was her husband, and he looked over at her, you know, like, you know, he knew about it. And she started to cry. So I went and I pulled out the DeMartini method, which, for those of you who don't know what it's about, it's a series of questions that help you bring your mind back into balance when you've stored up emotions that are guilt or shame or fear and these type of things. Basically, you can take any type of polarized emotion and synthesize it and bring it back where you can say thank you instead of all these emotional burdens. And so I took her through this process about 15 minutes, and I cleared the shame and helped her see the benefits to the family, the horse. We neutralized the guilt on it. She freed it up. And then I said, now tell me more about this vision that you have, this mission statement. And she's looked in her brain and she goes, it's gone. And I said, okay, so what's coming up now? She said, well, right now that's coming up in my mind is that I'd like to maybe help teens, young teens that are having challenges in their life and, you know, difficult times or whatever. I'd like to have a place where we could maybe help the teens. That's what's coming up in my mind now. I said, well, what, when you see teens, what do you see? He said, well, I see, you know, young girls or whatever. And I said, well, what age group? About, oh, 14 or so, 15. I said, what happened to you around 14 and a half in your life? And she goes, wow. And the guy next to her husband looked at her and goes, okay, because he knew something about her past. And she said, well, when I was 14 and a half years old, my father left us. And I was really a troublesome child. And we lived in the country and I didn't have a way of getting into the city where all the rest of the kids were. And I was always, you know, pushing my parents to drive me into the city and they were fighting all the time. And it was really turmoil. And I was literally suicidal. And I was so angry and I put my mother through hell and I demanded from her and she was having to work two jobs and it was just really chaotic. And I didn't want to, I just, it was painful. I said, can you see that you're trying to rescue people on the outside that represent parts of you that you have not sorted through and loved and appreciated on the inside? And you're the shame and guilt of what you did with your parents in your mind is now trying to compensate to try to rescue people on the outside. And she was mind blown by this. And I said, you mind if I clear that one too? So I pulled out the DeMartini method and I cleared that. And it took about 20 minutes to go through and ask questions and help her see that from a different perspective and where she was actually grateful for that instead of hurt by it. And I said, now tell me about this goal of helping these kids. And she goes, it's gone. And I said, what's coming up now? And both of these were altruistic. That's why I'm trying to make the point here. I said, what's up in now? What comes to your mind? What do you see? What would you love to dedicate your energies to now? And she said, well, what I'd love to do now is, I mean, this is mind blowing what you just did. You just dissolved two of the things that thought were most important in my life. What's coming up now? I asked her and she said, well, I would love to be able to help people know this. I mean, this is mind blowing to realize that I was driven in my life to compensate for things I felt shame in my life. I said, well, this is what's that goes on in many people's lives. They're compensating for shame and guilt of the past and not even knowing it. And it's keeping them from ever doing anything with fair exchange. It's making them feel that they owe people things and they're giving things without being able to have a fair exchange. I said, what's now in your mind? And she said, well, what's coming up now is that I would love to help people know this. And maybe we can use the land we have for a retreat center and have educational classes to teach people how to do this and help them break through their stuff and appreciate their life. And I said, all right, is this an altruistic act or is this something you want to get compensated for and have some sort of fair exchange? And she said, wow, now this is something that deserves to be paid. I'd like to do this. Now her husband's sitting next to her and he goes, I'm in. The whole time she was doing altruistic acts and he was paying for it all. And now all of a sudden he's engaged and he says, well, you know, if you're doing that, and I'm interested in that. And then I realized that all three of those involved land that she inherited from her mother when her mother died and that she felt she didn't deserve. And that's why she was giving away this lands in the service of the land also. And I said, what did you do to earn the land? Because if you don't feel you did anything to earn the land, you'll feel that you have to give it away to compensate. A lot of altruistic, charitable, you know, contribution stuff are coming from these states and not people don't even realize this. And they're robbing people of dignity, accountability, responsibility, productivity, because they're rescuing people and disabling people by giving them without having a fair exchange. And that usually doesn't work in the long run. It robs people of culture building. So in the process of doing it, all of a sudden she was now ready to do something that was fair exchange. And when I told her to write down the benefits of what would be the value of the land during the break, she came back and she wrote about 20 different benefits of what she did to earn the land, the benefits of that land and how, why she earned it. She actually thought, well, now her executive center came online and she could see things differently. And she says, I think I could build little cabins. We can have a retreat center. People could stay in the cabin instead of staying from distance and have to drive to it. We could charge for that at a fair price. And then we could educate people on things. And now her and her husband were really engaged on something that was fair exchange. So the reason I mention this is many people are storing in their subconscious mind, which are previous judgments that they hold inside themselves, guilt and shame that keeps them from being willing to have a fair exchange and a sustainable partnership and transaction with people and robbing them of the receptivity and opportunities that are surrounding them. So I'm a firm believer of going through and making a list of everything you feel shame or guilt about and actually writing down how it served you and served other people and clear that so you can receive in your life. In the breakthrough experience, I make sure that people get that. I teach them how to do the Demartini method on themselves to clear out the baggage that they've been storing for years. And in the breakthrough experience, I have people sometimes on Saturday evening about probably about 9 or 10 o'clock or so, they're sitting there going, wow, I just cleared about 40 different things in my life that I was not even conscious of that had been, that's been sitting there festering in there that I felt that I owe people things. And I felt guilty about it. Once that was cleared, the next day, they had less noise in the brain. They felt more honorable of their own self. They felt that they could stand up and look in the mirror and say, hey, I'm worth something. So it's very important to know that shame and guilt, as a result of doing something we think is causing a pain or a loss or a negative or some sort of a disadvantage to somebody, can also contribute to our lowered self-image and self-worth. And so anytime you're setting a goal that's not yours, anytime you set an impossible, an improbable, or an unstrategized goal, or anytime you do something you feel is...
Listen up. Imagine knowing with absolute certainty that your life is working for you, that you're on track, and that you're making progress towards the goals and dreams that you desire every day. If you've been an avid listener to this podcast, you'll have heard Dr. Demartini mention his signature program, The Breakthrough Experience. It's a two-day weekend seminar where he shows you how to take everything that you've been learning on this podcast and put it into practice so that you can gain the shifts that you most desire for your life. If you would love to transform your life, and if you've been a little bit uncertain where to start or how to get there, then join Dr. John Demartini at The Breakthrough Experience so he can show you how. What you'll learn in these 2 days is truly life-transforming. It's time to put the power in your hands to create your magnificent life. To find out more, go to demartini.fm/seminar. You can also access the link in the show notes below. We look forward to seeing you there. And now let's continue with this episode.
Not a fair exchange. These erode the self-worth. Foster Hibbert, who used to work with Napoleon Hill 35 years ago, I used to lecture with him 30 something years ago. We used to lecture together. And, he was telling people that if they want to get a higher deserve level, have more prosperity in their life, to go through and find out whatever they've done that they weren't grateful for, that they felt ashamed of, and go make a list of them and then go and compensate somehow for it. Now, I've got a more efficient system than I think he did in those days, and that to be able to dissolve that. But he basically went out of his way to get it all out by doing something altruistic to get it out of your system. But I don't find that's the most efficient. I find it's wiser to go in there and clear it. Because sometimes we do things we think we're ashamed of, and then we find out that it actually served people. All of us have had an experience in our life where we had this event we thought was terrible, and then a day, a week, a month, a year, or 5 years later, we turn out to be something we're thankful for. Well, some of the things we've done that we're carrying around shame and guilt about, other people are blessed by, and they're not even upset about it. We're serious still hoarding this shame and guilt over something because we never stopped and looked at what did it do to serve. So clearing that is helping the deserve level. But shame and guilt is the assumption that you've caused more pain than pleasure, more loss and gain, more negative than positive to somebody in the process or self. And by balancing that out, you also increase the deserve level. Doing things that are congruent and clearing out your shame can help make a big difference in what you are able to receive in your life. And that's all areas, not just financial. That's opportunities in business, opportunities in relationships, a greater standard of relationship, wealth opportunities, inspirational experiences. Lots of things, the things you want in life.
Fantastic. Thank you, John. And for the audience that's still listening, stay tuned. We'll be talking a little bit more about Dr. Demartini's method that he's touched on now and how you can get involved in taking part in working with John to work through clearing some of those cases for yourself. And I think, John, you really touched on the concepts of fair exchange when it comes to altruism, but I suppose the same is to be said for narcissism and the role that plays in one's deserve level. Could you touch on a little bit on the flip side of the coin for us?
Well, I tell people in the breakthrough experience, in all my programs, really, I said, I want you to have a perfect balance between your altruism and narcissism. I want you to go and serve as many people as you possibly can, serve vast numbers of people, and do great contribution. But I also want you to believe that you deserve great rewards, a great life. So I want your altruism and narcissism to be balanced and to be transcended and to be expanded as much as you possibly can in your life. So I show people how to expand what I call their sphere of awareness and influence by integrating those two. So there's a state called equanimity, which is a state where you're not exaggerating or minimizing yourself. Every time you exaggerate yourself with pride, narcissism goes up. Anytime you minimize yourself with shame, altruism goes up. Anytime you bring those into equanimity, they both dissolve and they both expand. And you give yourself the permission to do both. Serve vast numbers of people because you feel you're capable of it, and also receive rewards. It was the Book of Wealth by Hubert Hal Bancroft, which I had the blessing of summarizing and presenting, that stated very clearly in the early chapters of the book. It's a 10-volume set. It's an amazing book set. That there were three things that were common to the wealthiest people in the world. One, they felt by divine providence and human sovereignty that they were designed to serve vast numbers of people. So they were altruistic in that respect. They felt that they had a mission of service. I felt that I've had that really since I was 17 years old. And that they also felt that they had, by divine providence and human sovereignty, the feeling that they deserved to have the greatest that world could offer, the greatest standards that world could offer, and to surround themselves with the creations of the most inspired people. Now, you first miss, many people misinterpret that narcissism as something like a you know, exaggerated self. But this is actually very healthy, because what happens is, if nobody ever invested in the most inspiring people that do the greatest contributions, the standards would drop society in society. In other words, if there's a great cook out there and they're a master of cooking, and they can put together the most amazing flavors and most amazing things, and they're truly inspired and they love what they do. And I think of a person like Alan Wong, who's in Hawaii, who's absolutely a master cook, one of the greatest in the world. I've had the opportunity to meet him. He's just an amazing guy. He's a very inspired guy. He's one of the few billionaire restaurateurs. But he loves what he does, and he's a master. When you talk to him and listen to him about food, you're dealing with a master. And so anytime you invest in inspiration like that, you're raising the standards and you're giving other people the yearning to want to go and expand their capacities. So by you surrounding yourself with the finest and the greatest, you're actually investing in that inspiration and raising the standard of society. So when you see very wealthy people investing in high quality things, it's not just because, oh, I'm deserving, I should be narcissistic. It's also a wise thing for the sake of culture to raise the standards. The same in art, the same in music. So if you go and support the symphony and support the ballet and support the finest masters of whatever they do, you're raising the standard of almost every different industry. So that's why in business, if we surround ourselves with the A people, not the XYZ people, we grow a business. And because we're investing in inspiration, people that are engaged and more likely to be doing what they love. And this is the key. So one, number one was being willing to serve vast number of people. Two, being willing to surround yourself with the finest. And three, transcending the morality of good and evil associated with money. Because money is neither good nor evil. It's just a means of exchanging, fair exchange. And if you serve vast numbers of people, you deserve vast rewards. So those are three things that are common. So I'm a firm believer in giving yourself permission to be altruistic, narcissistic. And when they are perfectly balanced, they both pop. And now you're just dedicated to serving and being rewarded and living the finest.
Thank you, John. And you mentioned increasing your standards. And I think it's pertinent to see why the breakthrough experience really as well is so valuable to people, because you're surrounding yourself with those A-type people, like you said, not the X, Y, and Z, in a room with everyone focused on the same intention with the same goal. So, I've got another question here, which you can, if you could explain to us, the correlation between the amygdala and the executive center of the brain, because obviously I've heard you speak in a lot of detail in a lot of your other talks about the polarity, emotions, hindsight, which is the animal brain you touched on, and the other angelic nature, the integrated perceptions, foresight, and balance. I'd love to hear how you correlate the low and high deserve levels of not getting and getting what you deserve in life.
Well, I've been fascinated by the brain and used to lecture in neurology back quite a ways back, 1978, 9, 80, of that nature, and ever since really. And the layers of the brain and the way the brain and the tracks and the structure of the brain has fascinated me. But we definitely have layers. Now, McLean, back in the 60s and 70s, particularly the 70s, described us as having an amygdala, which is like a reptilian brain down deep inside. That's what they called it at those days. It's seen a little bit different than McLean's view today, but it's still the principle is the same. And he described that if you look under the triune brain or the three layers of the brain on the internet, you'll see this. The amygdala is involved in impulses and instincts. And then there's another layer of the brain we could call the limbic brain, which is involved in emotions. And then there's another layer of the brain, the cortex, neocortex, which is involved in objective reason. And then there's the prefrontal cortex, the very advanced, most advanced part of the brain. It's the very front, inside, middle portion, right in front of the hypothalamus, right in front of the suprachiasmic nucleus. It's the most powerful part of the brain. It's called the executive center because it's the master governor. It uses the integration of both hemispheres, the corpus callosum, to integrate the brain. And it literally normalizes physiology, the pineal gland. It's amazing, the structure. And the second we set goals that are aligned with our highest value, the moment we do, and we're truly congruent and cleared, that part of the brain lights up. Under functional MRI studies, the glucose, oxygen, everything, just it lights up. It comes online. And we are now, what happens, it electrically sends signals back into the visual cortex, down into the amygdala to calm the amygdala down so we're not emotional. And we are now able to see things objectively. We get to see what I call the divine master plan, you might say. And we are able to get an inspired vision. We see things. We're clear. We're lucid. We automatically are able to, with that vision, become now. And we actually strategically plan things as if it's now. It's like we're catapulted into the future with foresight and see things and brings it right now into the now as if we can do it. That's why we have a sense that it's impossible for us not to be able to do it. We feel it's destined. That's why the second we come online, we get answers to problems there. And we also not only strategically plan, but we want to execute the plans. We have a natural energy vitality that comes soaring out of us that we want to act now. We want to take action. And we also have self-governance. We're not easily swayed by infatuations or resentments or any emotional things from below. Our amygdala and our limbic brain is under governance. And the way that executive center is and all its little fascicles of nerves going back, it's amazing. And so when we live congruently with our highest values, we have the highest probability of achievement because we have foresight, we have vision, we have priority, we have strategy, and we just act. We can see it in our mind's eye. And once it's in the mind, there's a book back in the 70s called The Mind's Eye. It was a fantastic book talking about it. And so when we do that, we have to maximize our potential. Our deserve level goes skyrocketing because we are now the executive. And as you know, executives get paid more than people that work. And so you're now doing it. Now, there was a guy named Alec McKinsey wrote a book called The Time Trap many years ago. And he talked about people who spend more time planning and delegating. They are the ones that rise up. And the people that are doing things and managing and doing things are lower. And the people that just do things and never plan are the lowest in economic returns and rewards in life. And he talked about that in The Time Trap. And the people who know how to take the same amount of time that we all have and prioritize their actions and live according to what's really meaningful to them, truly meaningful to them, not the whims of other people, not the shoulds of other people, not the got-tos, have-tos, musts, and imperatives that our authorities say, mothers, fathers, preachers, teachers, and peer pressures, traditions, and conventions, but what's truly authentic to what is meaningful to our highest value. If we do that, the executive center comes online and we maximize our potential. We become masters of our destiny, not victims of our history. But if we, and our self-worth goes up. And if we go down in the lower areas, and this occurs every time we subordinate to people on the outside. And would you agree, if you don't get up in the morning and plan your day, weird stuff fills it. And people can get in and infiltrate our life and ask and request stuff from us. And we get caught and distracted by lower priority stuff. This lowers our self-worth, lowers our deserve level, gets us into our amygdala, makes us, as a result of our unfulfillment, immediate gratifying and looking for immediate fixes. And we become more impulsive and compulsive and addicted in our behavior. And we end up having more challenges in our life that we're not prepared for. We have no foresight. We're reacting and not acting. And we lower our self-worth. And we've all seen it at work with people. When people are doing a project that they're truly inspired by, they don't want to take a break. They don't want to eat. if they go and eat, it's quickly to eat and get back to the project. They don't want to distract themselves from it. They want to stay focused. And it's easy. Look, I'm in the middle of something. Back away, everybody else. I'm on my focus. But when people are not engaged, not inspired by what they're doing, and they're doing stuff that's unfulfilling to their highest values, they're watching the clock. You know, when you're really inspired, you don't even notice the time. You just don't focus on it. But when you're watching the clock, you quickly want a stimulant, a coffee, a tea, internet break or something, consumerism, sugar, whatever. All those things erode our confidence and erode our focus. And these are all signs of lower values and living in the lower part of the primitive part of the brain. And so this is crucial for us to take command of our life and prioritize our life and live according to what's meaningful to us. And that's why I teach a class called Master Planning for Life. That's why I do it, because people never get around to doing it. And I'm astonished why they don't take the time to structure their life and plan it, because I guess they've been so used to setting goals that aren't theirs and never getting them done that they go, why bother setting goals? You know, want to make God laugh, tell them my plans. Because they're so used to living by other people's goals and not really knowing who they are and setting goals that aren't theirs. And that erodes your self-worth. And that puts you in that amygdala area, makes you vulnerable and volatile and out of control and run by the world on the outside. You're an animal and you're probably be feeling like you're caged. Life is a cage. This is what Plato called the cave. People that live in the cave are the people in the amygdala, and the people that come out into the light are the people that live by the executive center.
Fantastic. And I think we're seeing a lot more of that now because of obviously mainstream media. We seem to be pushing a lot more of that. People tend to want to be like everybody else instead of being more authentically themselves. No. And obviously in the work environments, it's, you know.
I got interviewed. I mentioned this weekend at the Breakthrough Experience. I got interviewed by Vogue magazine a number of years ago, just a few years ago. And they said, Dr. DeMartini, they had me about 18 questions for me. And the very last question is, if there's anybody you could be on the planet, who would you want to be? And I went, why would I want to be anybody but me? I mean, that's insane. And why would I want to be a second somebody else when I can be a first me? I always say the magnificence of who you are is far greater than any fantasies you'll ever impose on yourself. So why minimize yourself to somebody else and expect yourself to be somebody else when you can be you? The magnificence of who you are is far greater. So I said that, and the lady was kind of like, oh, most people usually have somebody. You're the first person we've had that didn't say somebody else. I said, well, I don't know why they would say that. That would be insane. You know, I would rather be me. And so I tell people that the real you, the real true you, when you have equanimity and you're really inspired and you're lucid, is profound. And it'll bring tears of inspiration to you, not tears of sorrow. It'll bring tears of inspiration, and you'll lucid and you'll have a drive. I always say that your vitality in life is directly proportionate to the vividness of your vision. And your vision is crystal clear if you're in the executive center. You see it. You see in your mind's eye the outcome now. You're not even living in the future. I always say that if you're living in the future and you're living in the past, you know, when you're planning, I explain this in Master Planning. When you're planning the future, actually, if you plan it and it's objective and it's balanced and it's congruent, you are living it as you're planning it. You're actually in it. You're feeling like you're doing it. That's why you can see the plan so easily. But if you're imagining in the future, you're automatically still in some sort of an imbalanced state. You're still not quite objective. And I show them the distinction in the Breakthrough and in Master Planning, the distinction of that, so they can set real goals and know what it's like to set a real goal that they'll achieve. And it's better to have a few goals that you know that are certain than a whole bunch of whims that people end up beating themselves up with and have negative self-talk to themselves about. Negative self-talk is a feedback to let you know you're not setting goals of yours. And that's not a bad thing. Of the positive thinking people always want to get rid of that negative self-talk, you know, put rubber bands around your wrists and slice it or something. That's ridiculous. Your negative self-talk is a feedback to you to let you know that you are setting a goal right now and setting out to do something that isn't quite it. It's not you. And this is your feedback. Because the second you get clear and set it truly in line with what's you, negative self-talk disappears and you're inspired.
It's incredible. John, you've been teaching the Breakthrough Experience. You've mentioned a few times over the years. Could you touch on specifically how do your values processes and the DeMartini method that you've mentioned help to assist someone increase their deserve level? And maybe just summarize the important things a person can do today from this webinar, because obviously we want to add as much value as possible to the audience, that they can start increasing their deserve level today.
Well, I got introduced to human values back in the 70s. And really throughout the 80s, I was fascinated by that. And I was amazed there's so few real books and textbooks on the topic. And there's some classical stuff, and some of it I think is really outdated. But the one thing that was that stood out to me is the difference between an intrinsic and an extrinsic goal, an intrinsic value, an extrinsic value. And the intrinsic value is something that's not derived from the outside source. It's innate within you. It's really something that yearns to express itself. And an extrinsic derivative value is something that you've inculcated from outside. And therefore, you need motivation on the outside to get you to do it. So it's like an imposition. It's like a duty or responsibility instead of an inspiration. You know, when a boy is doing his homework, it's a duty. When he's doing his video games, it's a love. And his video games, he can do all night. And he can do it. He can work till midnight. And his parents say, you got to go to bed. Put that video game down. But he loves that. And that's the way you want life. You want life that way. So values are very crucial, and finding that and studying values has been, you know, important to me. And so I wanted to make sure that people in the breakthrough experience or in almost every talk I do, I understand how important it is to set goals that are really, truly valuable to you. And I'm amazed at how many people don't know that. I mean, I'm astonished. People go around and they're basically, when you ask them what their values are, they'll tell you cliches. They'll say, you know, platitudes, they'll say social idealisms, but they actually won't look at what their life demonstrates. And that's what on my website, I have a segment there, a questionnaire that's free. Please go on there and take advantage of it. But it's a way of helping you identify what your life really demonstrates, because your life, every decision you make is based on what you believe will give you the greatest advantage or disadvantage, greatest reward of a risk at any moment in time. So you wouldn't be making decisions and wouldn't be living your life if it wasn't for the values. So looking what your life really demonstrates is important to know what you value. Now, anytime you identify that accurately, there's an aha. There's a gamma brain wave that hits the brain with an aha. And your glutamate in the brain goes up. And the glutamate is part of the executive center's way of keeping the amygdala down. And the moment you see it, you get clear on it, you automatically have an advantage over people that don't see it. So finding out what you really value and starting to orchestrate your life around that is crucial if you want to increase your deserve level, achievement level, reward levels, economic levels, everything. Willingness to receive the person that you feel you deserve in your life. I mean, amazed how many people are accepting less than what they want in the relationship arena also, just like money. And so, finding out what you value most and doing the value determination process is the most efficient way I've been able to come up with so far. I may evolve that over time, but right now that's the best I got. And it's the most efficient way I know to get an objective view of what your life demonstrates is valuable to you. And so it's a 13-step questionnaire, and I know it can help people start to structure and prioritize their life accordingly. Because again, if you're not filling your day with high priority actions that inspire you, it's going to fill up with low priority distractions that don't, which self-depreciate. Anytime you do a lower value system, you lower your value. It's that simple. And anytime you do a higher value system, you raise your value in the world. And when you value, the world begins to value you. And until then, don't expect it to. And the DeMartini method now, that's unique. That's something I've been working on really since I was age 18. And I'm almost 63, so you can see how many years it's gone. And I started to put a thing together because I was looking at what it is that distracts people from being authentic and prioritized. What is it that does it? And I looked at all the emotional experiences that people have. I found out that each emotion is nothing but an imbalanced perspective. And I can actually trace the emotion. I can trace the series of amino acid transmitters or different transmitters and modulators in the brain that go with each of these emotions. And I can trace it back to what perceptions it is. It's really amazing. So our perceptions and the ratio of what we perceive as supporting or challenging us is impacting our emotions. And our emotions are that feedback mechanisms to let us know we're not balanced. We're not objective again. Our brain is a highest value seeking organ. And whenever we have emotions, it's letting you know we have an imbalanced perspective. And those emotions, joy, sorrow, happy, sad, pleasure, pain, seek, avoid, elation, depression, they are actually imbalanced perspectives. The second you actually balance them, you have gratitude, love, inspiration, enthusiasm, certainty, and presence, which I call the synthesized feelings that transcend the emotions. And these are signs of congruency. These are signs of equanimity. These are the signs that activate the executive center. They're found to activate the executive center. So on the DeMartini method, it's designed to ask a series of questions to help you become the bring the unconscious conscious so you have full consciousness, strengthen the intuition, bring the emotions back into balance, and liberate yourself from what they do when they weigh you down. Because if you're infatuated with something, it occupies space and time in your mind and runs you. You don't run you, it runs you. When you resent something, it occupies space and time in your mind and runs you. But when you have equanimity and you're not infatuated or resentful and you're not in pride or shame and you've taken those emotions and equilibrated them, you're liberated and you have less noise in the brain. The electronics in the brain are normalized. The executive center comes online and you're lucid. And we're designed to be lucid. You require less sleep. You require less, you're not distracted as much. Less noise in the brain. And you're more fulfilled and you have more meaning in life. So the DeMartini method is a very powerful tool to help raise the deserve level from that just perspective alone, let alone dissolving baggage that weighs you down, that keeps you in the animal brain instead of the angelic brain, as I like to call it. The angelic brain is the one that's got a mission and a message, and because that's what the angel means, a messenger. And so I always say that we have a messenger inside, and those with a mission, those that have a high value and inspired by a mission, a cause that they want to dedicate their lives to, have a message for the world. And I believe that we bring that out to the world and bring our vision and our contribution out to the world more if we live with these tools. And so I developed the DeMartini method and the value determination process both for that objective. Anything to do with maximizing human awareness and potential and helping evolve their consciousness to greater spheres of awareness and influence is what I'm fascinated by. I that's what I study every day.
Is there anything that you would like to highlight or bring to the fore?
Yeah, I just want to state that a number of years ago, I published a book called You Can Have an Amazing Life in Just 60 Days. And I went on a TV show to promote the book. And the host of the show was a little bit skeptical, which was healthy because he was probably registering what the audience was thinking. But he says, now, Dr. DeMartini, you don't really expect somebody to be able to change their life in 60 days now, do you? Isn't that a little bit of an exaggeration? And I just looked at him. I wasn't expecting that question. And I just looked at him. And I looked him straight, literally right there. And I got a little teary-eyed. And I said to him, I said, you know, it'd be impossible to convince me that you can't change your life in 60 days. Because my life changed in 60 minutes. The one night I met Paul Bragg in 1972, my life changed in 60 minutes. I'm doing what I do today because of meeting one man one night with one message that made me believe I could do something I didn't believe I could do at the time. And hanging out with that guy for the next 3 weeks catapulted me to do more with my life than I ever thought that I was going to do at the time. Ever since then, I've had a dream to do that for as many people as I can, because that gentleman absolutely got to me. And I've been working on it ever since. And so if for some reason anybody out there thinks that you can't go after what you really want in life, you even have any hesitation or doubt or whatever, please don't let anybody on the face of the earth, no one, make you believe you can't. Not your loved ones and not even yourself. All I know is that when I made my commitment to go after what my dream was and there was no turning back, my dream came true. I'm getting to do what I set out to do, Bang. So please give yourself permission to do something extraordinary on planet Earth. And please give yourself permission to take advantage of this opportunity, because I'm absolutely certain that just as he did for me, I can help you do for you. Because if you, for some reason, are not honoring the magnificence inside you and you're playing insignificant, there's no reason for it. The tools that I'm going to present will help you, and it will help you break through the limitations that you've been imposing. And it will be, it's not just for the weekend. You will have tools that you'll use the rest of your life, I promise. And I will promise you will also learn something that you could have gone your entire life and never learned. I ask that every close of the breakthrough experience, I ask every time, how many of you learned something this weekend that you could have gone your whole life and never learned? Every hand goes up. So I'm absolutely certain it can make a difference. And so give yourself permission to do it. And no matter what you've done in life, no matter what you've come from, what you've been through, what you've experienced, none of that has to be in the way. It has the opportunity to be on the way. If you look carefully, some of the greatest people on the planet started out with the most extraordinary challenges. And whatever your challenge is, just know that there's no challenge that your mortal body can experience that your mortal soul can't love and turn into opportunity. So I just want to share that. So please come and join me at the Breakthrough Experience. I know you'll say thank you, and it will make a difference. And if you want to raise your deserve level, this is an opportunity.
And that brings us to the end of this episode of the Dr. Demartini Show. To determine and discover your values, head over to drdemartini.com, where you will also find blogs, videos, research materials, online courses, and exactly how you can sign up to become part of the Breakthrough Experience in your local city. We look forward to sharing more inspired insights